Hello? Hello, this is Harvey Finnegan from Harvey Tech, and you're listening to Current Geek. You should help them out at patreon.com/...
That's frogpants, Harvey. patreon.com/frogpants.
Frogpants. Okay, that's it. Thank you.
I have...
Current Geek! Current
Geek!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings at the Frog Pants All-Stars. That's good enough, geeks of the world and you, to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson. That ham-fisted guy over there is Tom Merritt. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, I wish I could eat this ham fist. I left Gavel McLeod at home because I was in such a rush to beat the LA traffic, but I am actually here in the Toy Break World Headquarters. Because the Toy Break Marathon is kicking off. I'm very excited. Thank you guys for letting me invade.
In letting you? Are you kidding? We begged you to come over.
Really, we had no choice.
I'm super stoked to have them on the show, period. So what better way to do it than in their element on that couch that we all know so well before their big moment tonight. And you guys do this every year, right? You guys are used to this.
We do. This is our fifth year doing the 24-hour Toy Break.
Oh, that's amazing.
So that's a milestone year.
Yep.
Yeah.
Five year anniversary. Yeah.
We've been doing this for 5 years.
That's a long time.
I dare people at home to find a better source for all things collectibles, toys, and whatnot than your show. So a huge thanks for you guys keeping making it and being on the show with us today.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for having us back, Scott.
Well, as we always do on this show, we start with the top part of the show. And here's the intro for it.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom, on the street, go.
All right, our subreddit is the place to let us know what you'd like us to talk about, so do go there, currentgeek.reddit.com. Be like Jeff_Rose, who went there and pointed out that fourth grader Aiden Stewart was suspended last Friday after threatening to make another boy disappear using the magic of the One Ring. Now, as you might expect, Principal Roxanne Greer allegedly told the boy's father, Jason Stewart, that threats to another child's safety would not be tolerated, whether magical or not. Jason Stewart told the New York Daily News, "I assure you, my son lacks the magical powers necessary to threaten his friend's existence. If he did, I'm sure he'd bring him right back." Of course, that's what he'd say. The principal also appeared to be unaware that while the power of the One Ring is formidable, it generally makes the wearer invisible, not the person you're threatening. No reports on the fate of the ring are forthcoming, although it generally wants to be found. Disposal may prove difficult for Kermit Elementary School, as it can only be unmade in the fires of Mount.
Yeah. This is amazing. So I'm dying to know what you guys think. My first impression is this is definitely the middle space between letter of the law and understanding how silly it is, and they've decided to kind of straddle the middle and decide, well, we have rules, and regardless of the threat, we have to take those rules seriously because... You know, what if this was slightly more dangerous, like the ring had spikes on it or something and could punch him real hard or whatever. It seems like maybe this is a kind of side with the school in that they kind of have to do what they have to do. But it's very hard not to just sort of laugh at this.
This was a public school, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so. Yeah.
From what I remember. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was a public school. This is ridiculous. I'm done with people. Like, I can't. Are you serious?
Yeah.
I mean, like,
it's one thing to say, like, don't do that. That is not okay. Like, stern talking to.
Right.
Suspend someone.
And I feel like if this had happened back in our day, you wouldn't even get a call to your parents. It'd be like,
no,
Timmy, you can't say that.
You'd put on timeout, maybe lose recess if it was really serious or something. But
I think we're kind of missing the bigger point of this article in that the fourth grader obviously doesn't know how to use the ring.
Right. No, like, I think you're right. Thank you.
Like, he was about to give away the ring of, like, the magical ring, his precious.
I will make you.
And
no,
thrust
I will
it
disappear.
On the kid's finger. Right. Like, yeah. You can't, like, yeah. Don't.
Isn't disappearing good?
He obviously didn't watch those movies hard enough.
You're right. If he's threatening to make the other one disappear, he would have to be putting
the ring on the other kid's finger. And then he doesn't have the ring anymore.
That's the ring.
So really, the dad is at fault here because he didn't properly teach his kid how to watch movies. So yeah. Let's blame the dad. Let's suspend the dad somehow.
Well, you know, the dad is Stewart.
Oh, jeez. He was one of the nine. He'd lost control. Here's the thing, though. These kinds of stories always make me realize that there's two things happening at the same exact time. One, parents want schools to parent their kids more, and schools are terrified to say or do anything that could get them sued or construed as inappropriate or anything else. And so a lot of times I think they're just scared. So the school's like, well, the safe thing to do is just send him home, suspend him, and say, no threats, nothing's accepted no matter what, instead of saying, yeah, hey, Billy, you can't pull your ring out and say things like that for fear that a parent might freak out, threaten the school. You know,
I think you're right. The principal's not worried about Aiden Stewart at that point. The principal is worried about the other kid's parents
suing
right.
the school.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, because they're probably orcs.
Now, do you think that kid's parent, I mean, we don't have this information, obviously, but do you think that kid's parents actually complained, or do you think it was all like a preemptive?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question.
I wonder.
Because
if they actually complained, I could see the school saying, like, well, we have to do a response of some kind.
Yeah.
But if they didn't complain, this seems completely out of left field. Like, that's just silliness.
It almost seems like a fake story, too, because, like, so much stuff is, like, dumb about it. Like, it's so many people acting inappropriately. Like,
I mean, I don't want to slam Odessa, Texas, but having been through there, I'm not shocked.
All right. Well, yeah. And in the end, I mean, the bright spot of this kid's going to grow up to have an amazing story to tell. And
that's true.
Yeah. They're going to say, hey, tell us the story about the time you got kicked out of school for having the one ring.
I used the one ring to make myself disappear from school.
Yeah.
And poor little Aiden, don't worry. There's no permanent record. Nobody cares that you got suspended for using the one ring.
Yeah. You need to give that ring away, though. It will eat you out from the inside.
Yeah.
Come, like, butter spread over.
Maybe he knew that and he was trying hard.
Maybe
he's such a good kid. He was trying to get rid of the ring.
I like it.
Nate Bob pointed out this next one. The first trailer for Marvel's Daredevil is out. 13 episodes debut on Netflix April 10th. You can see Jonathan from Theory of Everything, Baby Jessica from True Blood, being all superheroic. Did you guys watch the trailer?
Mm-hmm.
What did you think?
Well, so this is coming to Netflix, and of course, one of the things I love about Netflix is you can just binge watch it the day it comes out. Love, love, love that, because I'm going to binge watch it at the end of a season if it doesn't.
Nah, that's it, though.
I
can binge watch, but...
No. Like, I would probably watch it because I can binge watch, but if it was a week-to-week show, the trailer did not grab me enough. Hmm. It was very, like, generic superhero, because there's so many now on TV. I mean, Green Arrow.
It was the dark superhero trope, for sure, yeah.
Flash, like, it's that whole, I care about my city. And I mean, that's great.
I got that Arrow vibe off of that.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. What did you think, George?
Jessica from True Blood's in it, so,
so you're in.
I'm in. That's enough for me to watch it.
I should do a blog.
We had talked on the show not long ago, Tom, about how Marvel, since they've been with Disney and since they've had great success in the theater, they've decided to go a little lighter. There's a little more humor. The colors are bright, kind of the opposite of the way Warner Brothers has taken Batman and Superman. They tend to go dark and brooding and don't have much of a sense of humor. This felt like a Marvel property that has no sense of humor. At all. Like, they were definitely going dark and gritty. While part of me wants that from Daredevil, because that's kind of my comic imprint from Daredevil, I'm a little disappointed that it doesn't feel like a Marvel property. It feels like something else. And maybe that put me off a little bit, but who am I kidding? I'm going to binge it and watch it and probably really enjoy it. And this is an important test for Netflix, right? If they can do this with good series based on properties like this that we're all excited about. Today there was some breaking news about potentially a Legend of Zelda original series, live action series coming to Netflix, which is a crazy idea. I don't even want to get into predictions about that, but they need these things to work before they really make a big splash. And if they can make a dark Marvel movie and still retain some of the fun of that universe, I think that would be better. But we're all watching it. Of course we are.
That was a really good point about how dark it is versus the more lighthearted feel. But maybe they felt like since Daredevil had that lighthearted feel, thank you, Ben Affleck, that they wanted to position away.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good point, because that movie has a terrible reputation. There's a good chance, and I'll admit right here, I kind of like the movie. I know.
I like the movie too. Yeah. Am I the only one on the couch who likes Daredevil? It's okay. I can live with it.
I liked it.
No problems or loves. Either I'm neutral.
Okay.
I didn't necessarily love it, but I remember walking out going, that was pretty good. I kind of like that. I hope there are sequels. And then there weren't any. There was just a bad spinoff, which I think we can all agree on that one. But
Yes.
Yeah. But if they can, you know, if they can make this work, that means successful series on Netflix followed by more, which means lots of interesting properties.
They've got four already in the hopper, right? Like, they're happening no matter whether this does well or not. That's kind of the thing about Netflix, is they're just like, well, we know enough people will watch it. It'll get some subscriptions. That's all we care about.
Yeah, no Nielsen ratings needed or any of that. So, yeah, on the whole, I'm excited. I guess I just walked away going, ooh, okay, we got blood and guts and a little bit of, you know, angry Batman going here, and I guess I'm okay with that. So we'll see. Time will tell.
I'm fascinated about that Zelda news.
Oh, I know, right?
I don't even know about that. That's cool.
If that thing is not, if it's not live, or not live action, but if it's not,
it
like,
is
it live action? Is that confirmed?
Yeah. Well, see, that's the good question, whether it's confirmed. But all the rumors are saying it's live action.
Because I could go, I mean, I don't know how you do that. That's a pretty empty sounding idea. But if you were making a kid show, sort of Pixar animated type thing, fit really well. You can do a lot with those stories. A lot of exaggerated stuff can happen in animation, whereas live action has me genuinely concerned. But again, this is one of those cases where it feels it's no risk to me. I'm a Netflix subscriber. If they make this, I'll watch it. It could be the greatest thing ever for all I know. So,
yeah, that's a good point, though. The show is a rumor from the Wall Street Journal saying they're going to do this. Netflix hasn't actually announced it.
All right. Well,
also a good point that if Netflix makes 13 episodes of just about anything, especially comic related, everyone here is going to watch it.
Yeah.
It's 13. You're like 13 episodes. I can do that in a weekend.
An afternoon.
Afternoon, really.
But really long afternoons.
Plus, they're bound to have some amazing metrics on who's watching what. And they know more than anybody probably how their sort of nerd stuff is doing. Like the things that gather the most, sort of savvy sci-fi and science fiction fantasy people. They know what that stuff's doing and how it's performing. And everything I keep hearing being announced is either in that vein or is going to, you know, trying to capture like the Breaking Bad audience or something else. They know what does well there. So they're building shows based on what's succeeding. And, you know, it feels like they know who they're catering to. And I feel like we're archetypes of who they're catering to.
And they can cater to multiple audiences. They don't have to cater to just nerds. They could also cater to like teen horror, and then they can cater to romance, and then they can cater to historical. And it doesn't matter because they're not taking away a time slot like a linear broadcaster would be. Right. You can just decide, oh, I don't want to watch that one, but I will watch this other.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
And that said, what a wonderful time to live as a geek in the world.
I agree. If anything, it's just too much sometimes. Like I realized the other day, I ended up going into Netflix and thinking I knew exactly what I wanted to see, and ended up going about, I don't know, five different rabbit holes before I finally decided not to watch anything. Because I was just like, there's so many choices. I really don't know what I want to see. Yeah, it was really kind of annoying. I walked away from that experience going, it was, you know, as much as we had less to see, at least I knew Super Friends was on at 7 a.m. on Saturday mornings, and that was the thing I would go see. And now it's like, how many choices do I have?
Sometimes it's fun just to sit there and scroll through all the things that you could watch.
That's true.
Bookmark them for some day. And
yeah, but sometimes it's half an hour later. Yeah. And you're like, I've just been scrolling.
I like that.
It's its own kind of fun.
It's 800.
Yeah.
I'm sorry,
it's like browsing a catalog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
It's the dream book of the modern age.
It is like Christmas every day.
Okay, I'm going to get in trouble with this next story because it's about toys, and I'm next to people who know about toys. So tell me what I got wrong. Another Jay Martin pointed out on the subreddit that the YouTube video announcing WALL-E and Doctor Who Lego sets as the next Lego idea sets. Angus McLean from Pixar suggested WALL-E. Doctor Who and Companions was suggested by designer Andy Clark. Design and availability will be coming later this year. And they've announced the next round as well, which includes Avengers, Goonies, Labyrinth, Marvel Maze. Like, what is what for people who don't know this? Like, what do they're just doing like a
what
rolling reveal
ideas?
Thing? Yeah.
Okay, so Lego Ideas came out of this other site, Kuso, Lego Kuso, which is where people can build their own sets, their own models, whatever they want to build, and then they submit it online. And then if I think it's 10,000 people have to sign up and vote and say like, yeah, I like that, I'd buy that. Who knows if they actually would. Once it gets 10,000 votes, then Lego reviews the idea and says, should we make this a set? And then sometimes they do.
And so that's what this announcement is we're doing Doctor Who and Companions and we're doing WALL-E.
So from this program is how we got the Ghostbusters,
mm-hmm.
Ecto-1, which is awesome, and the Back to the Future DeLorean. So we're getting some really cool sets that, like, we're not going to get a whole Back to the Future line, probably.
I mean, are you guys sad we didn't get the Firehouse and the Ghostbusters set, but that didn't happen?
I'm not sad because I could just build it, but...
It's not really much to it, I guess. It's kind of a big rectangle. But
I feel like that would probably be too expensive for Lego to make as a set to market.
Yeah.
Maybe? I don't know.
Yeah.
That particular one? I don't know. Who knows how they pick the ones they pick. But I think this is fantastic. And I know Angus, and congratulations to him, because that's amazing. Super cool that you got, you know, it's a movie he worked on. And he made this amazing model out of it. And now Lego's going to produce it. And we can all have a little.
So are we guaranteed that they're not going to be... Are they going to be super limited runs? Like, I know that Minecraft one that got approved through the same program didn't end up being as widespread in terms of availability as some of these others do. Is that kind of the norm? Or do they each get treated differently depending on what kind of market they think they have? Or how does that part work?
That's a good question. Because Lego does not release their set numbers. Mm. They are more limited than a regular... quote-unquote regular set, although all sets are retired at some point. But stuff like the Ghostbusters and the Ecto-1 and the DeLorean, those were in all the Lego stores in America and I think overseas as well. So, I mean, they're relatively findable. And if you're willing to pay a slight markup, you can definitely find them on the secondary market. And, I mean, there's going to be ways. Okay. The one I'm actually surprised about is the Doctor Who, because is it Brick People? I think it was Brick People. Whatever. The British company already made a building block. They made custom building blocks. Custom bricks. Thank you, off-camera voice.
Interesting. So that is interesting, because basically that's sharing the license with two brick makers, I guess.
Right. So I think that license actually, I'm assuming that license ended, because I haven't seen any new Doctor Who building block toys. So it's cool that it's now going to be Lego, because... for us nerds that actually prefer Lego to other building blocks because the quality is so much better.
Yeah.
We're going to get little Doctor Who figures.
Now, in the next round are things you would expect, like Avengers, and there are things that are cool that maybe you didn't expect, like Labyrinth Marble Maze, but there's also piano.
Yeah, piano.
Like, what am I missing here? I feel like
it might be from...
It's a grand piano, and all they said in the video was, and piano.
You know, piano.
It's a nice looking piano.
Some people like models of pianos, I guess.
Right. So, it just seemed a little out of place.
So this is separate from the big helicarrier thing they're doing for the Avengers, I assume, and a separate set. Okay.
Yes.
That thing.
You also didn't mention Goonies.
Oh, yeah. No, it's Goonies. It's a Natural History Museum. Okay. Minas Tirith.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Although, if you're in Odessa, you might want to avoid that.
I want Goonies Lego. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. I'm also really happy that they're doing Jurassic Park, but that makes a lot of sense since they already announced the Jurassic World sets are coming out. Mm-hmm. So just stick a different sticker on there and you've already got your Jurassic World set.
So you think that one's going to win? Because they're like, easy.
Yeah, they're like, oh, look, just put a bunch of Raptors and we already have a Star-Lord figure.
Don't even have to call the legal team.
Well, if they base it on the original Jurassic Park and like do them for each movie, which may seem a little far-fetched, but if they did, if the Samuel L. Jackson arm doesn't get removed simple, easy, I'm not interested. No sale, I say.
Hey, you can pop any minifigure arm off.
Can you? Will it be all bloody and gross? And will my little minifig of
wants tiny, tiny red blood droplet blocks.
I'll make you one, Scott.
I want Laura Dern to be horrified when she sees it. That's what I really want.
Speaking of horrified, we have a sad story next. Radio Shack filed for bankruptcy Thursday. Lots of people submitted this on the subreddit when it was a rumor, but it's now faxed. Faxed. It's now been faxed to us. So now we're the fax machine.
Yeah.
They have a deal to sell 1,500 to 2,400 stores to Sprint and General Wireless to operate them. General Wireless is a subsidiary of a company called Standard General, which is the hedge fund that's the largest shareholder in Radio Shack. So there's something a little internecine there. But anyway, some of them are going to turn into Sprint stores. And the underperforming stores will be liquidated. The rest of Radio Shack's assets are going to be auctioned off as part of the bankruptcy proceedings. They had 11 consecutive quarters of losses.
Wait. You said Radio Shack filed for bankruptcy Thursday. You meant Thursday 1995, right?
No.
I'm teasing. I used to love Radio Shack.
You also said they have really hard.
Over 2,400 stores?
They have 4,000 stores.
They have 4,000 stores. That's incredible.
The 2,400 of them are going to become Sprint stores.
You know, we're down to like less than 800 Toys R Us's.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a sad thing.
Oh, that way more.
Yeah. That seems to be there.
So if you, okay, so Radio Shack, you know, if you needed an LED or a freaking battery or whatever, this would be the place you'd go.
And I need an RCA to mini jack splitter with a
exactly.
transistor radio.
Where do you go?
And now it's kind of
you can't get it right away. Yeah. You have to go online and order it like overnight.
Now it's like mono price or whatever, which is fine. I understand how these markets shift and change, and I shift and change with them. But I wonder why it has stuck around so long, because it can't be. I mean, 11 straight quarters of losses. That means that prior to that quarter, they made money. What were they doing then? I don't even know what they've done. And it seems like, yeah, it's a joke to say, they should have filed a 95. But it really does feel like their relevancy dried up in the late 80s. And I don't know how they've been around.
Selling phones. They were doing well selling phones. They were definitely a multi-phone store. I brought my first cell phone at a Radio Shack in San Francisco. Yeah.
A StarTAC, Motorola StarTAC.
I brought a Samsung Sprint phone.
Can I guess last time either of you have been in a Radio Shack?
No, I needed to pick up before I found the joys of Amazon. So wait, I before Amazon became everything that I needed to be in life, I needed a jeweler screwdriver set. And like Radio Shack was the only place that I could like go get one immediately right now. I need it.
Yeah. I swear to God, I'm not even kidding. I think the last time I was in a Radio Shack was 11 quarters ago. It was about 3 years ago when I still lived in San Rafael. There was a Radio Shack in the mall near my house. And I went there to get like an SD card, I think.
Oh, wow.
Wow, really? Like, yeah. Over Best Buy?
Best Buy was much farther away. Oh, so okay. It's like Radio Shack's 2 minutes.
Was it realistic brand?
And around the corner.
Do they make a realistic brand SD card, or did you have
to? No. Well, see, they gave that up a long time ago. I think people have that problem of like, oh yeah, Radio Shack has all that in-house stuff. They stopped that in the 90s, but people still had that impression, even though they were selling branded material.
They probably still don't. I mean, I don't know when they would have stopped this, but back in the day, if you remember, when you'd go in there, just even get like one battery or one little cable or something, they would make you fill out this huge, like almost medical form. It was your home address, your number, all this information about you for a tiny little $2 item. And that used to put me off so bad that I'd never want to go in there again. And I'm guessing they gave that up a long time ago, too. But it still sticks with me as a thing that makes me not want to go in there. And I wonder if that stuff just added up after a while. It's like, well, they only have Tandy. Well, that adds up. They only make you fill out this thing every time. Well, that adds up. And it just got to the point where we all had these conceptions about that place that maybe aren't even true anymore, but they don't have a way to market themselves out of it.
Yeah, I mean,
that's interesting.
Well, the other thing that's interesting is a lot of Radio Shack locations are not Radio Shack owned. So they're not the 4,000 stores that are going away. They're locations like the Radio Shack I had growing up in Greenville was Will of the Wind Hobby Shop and Radio Shack.
Really?
So you go in there and they had like, you know, cross stitching and yarn and toy trains and balsa wood. And then there was the Radio Shack part that had like the TRS-80s, and that's where I spent a lot of time like playing with computers, playing with TRS-80s, and I really wanted that little mini computer TRS-80 that they had.
So good.
Yeah, and I bought my turntables when I became a DJ in the 80s from because they were had buy one get one free. So I went to Will of the Wind, but Will of the Wind's still there. They stopped being a Radio Shack licensee a long time ago, and they still have some electronics, just not the Radio Shack stuff. So I wonder if a lot of those kind of places will still be around.
I'd never even heard of that. That's weird they even had the – I mean, I remember like Hollywood Video had attached to it Game Crazy, and that was kind of their weird kind of video game rental slash, you know, store offshoot. But that was all owned by the same company. The idea of – licensing the right to have a mini Radio Shack in your little boutique or whatever is the weirdest idea I've ever heard.
Will of the Wind. That's was great. The best part. Will of the Wind and Radio Shack.
Sounds like a glorious place.
Yeah. You know what else is a glorious place? The Hen Na Hotel, which is Strange Hotel in Japanese, opening its doors on July 17th on the grounds of the Huisten Bosch theme park near Nagasaki, mostly staffed by 10 robots. The robots will work reception, carry bags, clean your rooms. You can opt to have facial recognition replace your room key. Rates will run about $60 to $75 a night.
That's not one bad.
Word. One word, Skynet.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that is one word, isn't it? It's hyphenated. I don't know what it is. That's my birthday. I should go celebrate it by staying in a robot hotel. That sounds awesome to me.
This reminds me, if anybody read Altered Carbon by Richard Morgan, the hotel that the guy stay, the main character stays at is entirely robot run and no one else will stay there. So he gets like a really good rate.
Yeah.
That's probably going to happen here.
Yeah.
I don't want a robot to clean the room. Like what, like how are they going to, it's not going to work.
It's that just, it's one bipedal robot with a brain and then like five Roombas that do his bidding.
I don't mind that. So it's $75 though.
Yeah, I'd do it.
I mean, that's a good price, I guess, but...
Well, you definitely won't have that housekeeper robot force their way into your room, even though you're saying, do not disturb. Like, it'll read the do not disturb thing and just keep going.
That's that true. Would be nice.
I hate it when they're like, oh, I didn't see the sign.
Yeah.
Or it's like 7:30 in the morning, they're knocking,
housekeeping.
You're like, why would I be up now?
Yeah. Oh, I thought you checked out.
I didn't. I'm not about to predict that this is the future or anything, but it does seem like more of this sort of stuff will get more and more automated. But the idea of replacing all the employees with sort of sentient thinking with robots who have all this sort of, you know, pre-planned algorithmic way of doing things is a little scary, because the one that doesn't read your card that says do not disturb because it was turned slightly or something is going to come into the room and do it anyway and not have the wherewithal.
Well, it's all the programming, Scott. If you can't read the card, you don't go in, and then people complain that their room didn't get cleaned, I guess. But is it any worse than people who mess up all the time as well? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the robot, it's not going to steal your stuff. You know that, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Not at
unless
first.
It's unless programmed.
It's programmed to steal your
I
stuff.
I was programmed to steal.
But not love.
Amazing.
I love to steal.
Oh! So at the bottom of that article, it said something interesting, because I think this is very gimmicky, obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
But
it's a theme park hotel.
It said that, you know, they want to open like 1,000 similar hotels around the world. I don't think that would fly almost anywhere else.
There's probably 1,000 theme parks. So sure, maybe...
Japan's used to this. Japan is so used to this weirdness, though. Like, this feels perfectly suited there. If you suddenly put this in Lake Tahoe, heads would roll, you know?
Thank you. Exactly.
Dubai?
Maybe.
No, I don't think they'd go for it.
What about
a five-star robot?
What about the people who are those, there's that special kind of guy out there that likes to get caught by the maid? Like, so what happens to that guy? He goes,
it's a checkbox.
A robot,
when you check
comes
in, there's
in,
a select,
like,
you know, yes, no. You just choose.
Sir, please put your wiener away. Yeah, who knows? Anyway, we'll report back. Well, we know what will hopefully happen is a fan will go and we'll get to talk about it on the show. That's what I really hope.
I hope so too.
We're hoping to make it to Japan next year. So.
Oh, you'll have to go.
Maybe
are
we'll
going
have
to
check
Nagasaki.
In. Maybe we'll check in.
That would be awesome. We need a report.
Okay.
Finally, FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler wrote an opinion column for Wired Wednesday indicating that he would propose, and he did propose, that the FCC use its Title II authority to implement and enforce open internet protections. His proposal will ban paid prioritization, ban the blocking and throttling of lawful content and services. And he hopes to preserve motivation for continued investment by ensuring there will be no rate regulation, no tariffs, no last mile unbundling. So those are the rules he's proposing. They'll be voting on February 26th. And for the first time, open internet rules would apply to both wireless internet providers as well as wireline providers. I'm curious, like, in the geek world, right, everybody's like, oh, victory for net neutrality, or like, boo, it's the government stealing the internet. What do you guys, what do you care? Is it something you're following?
I mean,
you guys do podcasts. So.
Yeah, I keep abreast of it. But like, I mean, on a day-to-day, in day-to-day life, it doesn't really affect anybody per se, because it's just going to be debated for another 5 to 10 years before we get to anything that actually happens. This in particular is just as vague as everything else that has already happened with net neutrality. I do love that it's finally extending to wireless. You know, they're finally including that in the same, like, hey, data's data. It doesn't matter where it is.
If we're going to treat it some way, we should treat it all the same way.
Exactly. Yeah. By putting words in there like throttling, the blocking and throttling of lawful content, that leaves it open to be like, well, how are you tracking lawful versus unlawful content? How transparent is that from company? You know, there's a lot of questions and issues that arise individually, but those will just be explored over the next few years.
Doubles in the details.
Exactly.
It's going to be a fight, though, right? Like Tom talked about this earlier this week. There's no way that the various interests in this fight go down easily. This will probably end up in front of the Supreme Court at some point. I don't see, you know, the likes of Verizon and Comcast just stepping aside and saying, "Yeah, you're right. Come on in," have your way. It's not going
to. Yeah, AT&T seems to be leading the bluster charge as far as threatening lawsuits. So we will probably see a lawsuit, whether it's from AT&T or somebody. We will see the Republican Congress already pushing a bill that President Obama has threatened to veto. So, like you say, these guidelines will go into place, and they'll be in place until they work their way through the court system and the congressional legislation. And the thing is, everybody's following these kinds of guidelines already because they're not sure what the end is going to be. So when you say right. It's going to be another 5 years, you may be right before we actually decide on anything. George, do you care? Do you follow this?
I don't really know much about any of it, but I do know that it, like, I feel like cable companies and people that provide internet already do that. They're just not telling you they're doing it. I feel like, because they already have all plans where you can pay more to get better internet.
To get better, faster internet.
Right. So, yeah. Like, I feel like it's just going to, like, no matter what, we're already kind of doing that. And if they're just going to push it even further and make you pay for other services, like, I feel like people don't have any choice anyway, because corporations have more money and corporations can do whatever they want. So we're going to end up doing whatever they say we're going to end up doing.
So do you feel like they're lying about throttling? And?
Yeah, I think they already do that. I think.
Well, of course they do.
So, like,
that's
I don't
been
know.
Proven.
So I guess, like, I don't
multiple
know.
Multiple times.
I think even if they say that, like, even if we come up with a law that says they can't do that, what they're, who's like,
what the interesting thing to look not. At everyone, a lot of people are saying we won because they were proponents of net neutrality. Mm-hmm. When you look at it closely, an emailer to DTNS pointed this out, who also won were Google and Facebook and lots of other big corporations who lobbied on the side of pro net neutrality because throttling and blocking affect their businesses. So you're right. This is actually a battle amongst corporations from a certain point.
Yeah, in a way, we just have to sit here and take it until that war is over. Yeah. And then we get whatever's left. We get the scraps. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. But now is the time.
Can't stop that robot maid.
That's right. That five-star maid. Don't try to stop her. Here's a chance for us to really have some fun, and that is to play our pop quiz. And here is our theme song for it.
America scores and wins.
All right. We have not pre-warned you. I pre-warned you a little bit. I told you what your categories were before the show. We usually don't do that, but given your proximity to Tom, we know you're not cheating. Like everyone else would. here's how this goes. We ask you a series of questions. They're in areas of your expertise. If you get an answer correctly, it'll be. If you get it wrong, it'll be. And whoever wins. And that's it. You don't win any actual prizes. It's all just for fun and for poking each other's nose in it. We're going to start with Aileen. Are you ready for your questions?
No, but I'll say yes.
All right. Your questions today.
Can I steal?
You can't steal.
I was supposed to have these. Up. Why aren't they up? Oh, here we go.
My intern was supposed to bring me these questions.
All right, here they come. These are questions about McFarlane Toys specifically. All right, so we're going to test your expertise with McFarlane Toys.
Could be embarrassing.
Here you go. Eight questions starts with this. What year did McFarlane Toys release the first line of Movie Maniacs figures?
1997?
Oh! 1 year off. 98.
Shoot.
98. All right, we're giving you 3/4 of a point for getting 3 of the 4 digits in the year.
I forgot to mention, the way Tom scores this is super weird and not very normal. Next question. What band was the first to have figures made of them by McFarlane Toys?
Oh, the first band? I can't even think of a band that McFarlane made toys of.
Can I steal?
No.
Okay, I'm gonna say, and now we're gonna just ask you what you think it is, George.
Kiss?
You are correct. Yeah. Nicely done. Here, we'll give you a
That's not fair.
Psycho Circus. I worked on him.
That's not fair. He worked at McFarlane.
That's true. This is why we did not give him these questions, by the way. Next up, how about this one? In what year was the first series of Spawn figures released?
1994.
You are correct. Nicely done. Yeah. What was the first video game to get a figure line by McFarlane? I actually knew this one. I couldn't believe I knew this one.
Yeah, I know you know it.
It was Pong.
There's balls?
Big vinyl Pong ball.
First video game. I have no idea.
That would be incorrect. The correct answer is Metal Gear Solid, the Vulcan Raven figure is awesome.
Actually, you get a half point for answering correctly that you had no idea.
Yeah.
I love Tom's scoring.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's famous now. Here's this one. What musician has McFarlane Toys produced the most figures of? There are 13 of them is the hint.
I don't track any of the music stuff from McFarlane. Oh, is it a Ramon?
Incorrect. And I'll throw it to George to see if he knows.
I would say Gene Simmons, maybe. I don't know.
That is also incorrect. It is right. Elvis Presley with 13 figures.
They mean 13 Elvises?
Really?
Yeah. Wow. They were all shook up, if you know what I mean.
That's thin.
Sandwich?
On the throne.
How about this one? What was the theme of the figure set Spawn Series 9? You know how they do themes with those.
Oh, please. Mandarin.
You are, well, I don't know, are you? It says here it was manga themed. Do we count that?
No, that's not correct.
Then, A, I'm a racist, and B, you were wrong. So it is manga themed.
We're docking Scott a point for being racist. And we're going to give Aileen 0.03 points for having M-A-N in her answer.
My adopted Korean brother would smack me today for what I just did. Anyway, here's the next one. What did McFarlane start producing, or I'm sorry, what year did McFarlane start producing sports figures?
1999?
2001 is the proper answer. 2001.
Oh, so you get 0.25 because you got one of the digits right.
Yeah. That's when him and Kurt.
Oh, yeah.
All right, final question. McFarlane Toys produced figures for the TV series Lost. How many series of figures were made featuring characters from the show?
They're still making them.
Are they really? Wow.
Aren't they?
I don't know.
No, did they give up on that? 7.
You are incorrect. It says here 2. 2 series. Didn't do too bad, though. I think you did all right compared to
that was terrible.
She was referencing the 5 Lost series of Lost.
I see. All right, well, hold on to that score because George now has a chance to not steal. I don't know why I was going to say he was going to steal.
I'm going to be terrible at this, but let's go for it.
No one's going to steal anything. Although, Aileen will check with you if things look weird on these answers. Here's your first question. These are heavy metal questions because you're a fan. At least Tom told me that. Here's your first question. what guitarist joined Metallica in 81 but was fired prior to them recording Kill 'Em All?
No idea.
That is... It's correct technically, but incorrect answer. Dave Mustaine, who would later form Megadeth.
Wow, Megadeth's Dave Mustaine.
Yeah, it's a really good documentary.
Half point for having no idea.
what year was Iron Maiden's Number of the Beast album released?
78?
You are incorrect. It is 1982. what was the first AC/DC album to feature Brian Johnson on lead vocals?
Never heard of any of those people. Back in Black.
You are correct. Nicely done.
Never heard of any of those people. You've never heard of AC/DC.
I know AC/DC. I don't know what any of those names are.
All right, that's good.
All right.
Yeah, nice job. You got it. How about this one? Which Black Sabbath album, I guess, featured the classic track Iron Man?
Oh, I should know that. I no idea.
Paranoid is the correct answer. Paranoid.
You had an idea. So you don't get points.
That's two pizza mascots, I always say, when someone says paranoid. It's a terrible joke. Tom should appreciate it. All right, next up.
Avoid the noise.
Yeah, paranoids. Get it? Which Pantera track was featured in the original Guitar Hero game from 2005? So which Pantera track? I don't know how you'd know this. I would never know this.
Nope.
All right, it is Cowboys from Hell.
Oh, of course.
I should have just guessed that because that's like their famous.
It's their track.
I should have just said that name.
But I wouldn't have even known that.
I wouldn't have known it. All right. What symphony played with Metallica on their S&M live album? The hint is they're sort of close to where you live.
The Los Angeles Gay Men's Choir.
You are incorrect. It is the San Francisco Symphony.
Symphony.
I'm going to give you 0.05 because that should be the
game. Yeah, that should be it. That should be it, really. We get right down to it. All right, what is your second to last question? What is the name of the debut album by Megadeth?
Is it just Megadeth?
You are incorrect. It is Killing Is My Business and Business Is Good.
Business Is Good.
Yeah.
Ah!
Yeah.
I know all this afterwards.
Final question. McFarlane Entertainment has produced several music videos. Which music video did they produce for Disturbed? And I'll give you a hint. It's a cover of something older.
I didn't know he did a Disturbed. I know he did Korn.
Did some, did a Korn thing. That's true.
I don't, but what's that? Disturbed. What's that song? I don't know. No idea.
It is Land of Confusion, originally recorded by Paul.
I feel like that's where I just was.
Phil Collins.
I'm going to give you a half point Korn bonus. Yeah.
Well,
little known rule.
That's great. Not heard that one before. All right, Tom, add them up. How'd they do?
Well, it's a tight score. George finished with 2.3, but Aileen edged him 2.53.
Nice. Look at that, everybody. Congratulations.
I wish I had your thing. I would have aced that one.
I'm glad I didn't have yours.
By the way, I said toys for both of you, and then Scott's like, well, is there anything else? I'm like, I don't know, heavy metal? ? I don't know why I even said that.
And I ran with it.
I was just trying to come up with
something. I should have known a lot more of that.
Right.
I should have known.
Well, that...
You should have obscure Beastie Boys trivia. That one he would have gotten all
of. Oh, see, I should have asked you.
That Star Wars t-shirt you're wearing.
The time that you could ask me.
Yeah, I know. But I think I was so thinking, she'll be competing, so I can't have her suggest, you know, that would... Like this is
like, I think
Olympic
get
rules.
The Boba Fett shirt you're wearing is pretty metal. I'll just say that.
Exactly.
All right, here we go. Let's get to the fourth.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
This used to be a segment. It's now, or a show. Now it's a segment. And it's called Forecast, where we try to predict the future. George had a great one. George, you want to tell us what it is? What's your future prediction?
My prediction was that Matt Inman from The Oatmeal will someday run for president and win because he has so many darn followers.
That guy, dude, that guy has...
He'll just ride in on a wave of oatmeal.
Yeah, he is unusual in the sense that it's truly remarkable, his following and his fan base. But also, it's a following and fan base for his ideas. Like, it isn't so much about his art style. It isn't so much about any of the traditional things you would think of when it comes to a cartoonist. It is mostly about his kind of radical honesty that he then portrays with such hilarity. It's like a great stand-up comedian in a way, but with a very different form of showing it. And it's not that far-fetched of an idea that a guy like that with those kinds of ideas might be interested in changing the world in other ways. So why not? I actually think your prediction's not that crazy. I think that's a decent prediction.
I guess the thing it hinges on, I mean, we could talk about whether he would actually win or not, but I think you just made a case why he could.
Yeah.
Would he ever run? Do you think he'd actually want to be president?
No.
That's the part I have a harder time figuring out, like, what would be the situation that would make him do that?
Yeah.
Yeah, unless he felt that there was an actual way to make some change, because he does seem to want to make change for
sure.
The good.
Yeah.
But I don't think the president really has any power to do anything like that. So I don't think...
By himself.
Yeah, like he wouldn't really be able. I don't think as a president you can actually make any significant change to anything.
Yeah, it seems like it.
Really?
Like every president, it doesn't matter whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, when your guy gets in the House, all of a sudden they don't do any of the things that they told you they were going to do.
Yeah, you can't.
They're like, oh, we didn't realize we couldn't put a vending machine in the every classroom.
Unless he really just wants gray hair, because every president always gets gray hair by the time they're done.
Yeah, yeah, you can tell the first 4 years in and they're just like,
I'm going to run on a platform of getting gray hair. I will keep
this
promise.
I want gray hair.
I'm voting for you, Tom.
You know, and that's a promise you can keep. You can make sure.
I would vote for Matt Inman.
No, he's great. The guy's great. I think that he's it's interesting to see internet quote unquote celebrities who can wield real power. He's one of them. Like he could really get grassroots something happening. Has already in some ways.
I wonder if it wouldn't be better. Maybe at least at the start, like Matt Inman should run for Congress or Senate.
Mm.
You know, because you actually in some ways can may have more of an effect, at least on your locality,
right?
Mm-hmm. As a representative or a senator.
I think he should go with a mantis shrimp in every house. That's his running slogan.
The mantis shrimp party, promising a mantis shrimp in every house.
That's all right. I mean, he's an interesting dude. I always loved the movie Dave, which was incredibly Yeah, that movie's awesome. But it's so incredibly naive about what it would actually take for a guy like Dave to get into the White House. And but I always I always appreciated the idea that even though he got in there as this sort of like fake president and then got out again, he went back to doing it the good old-fashioned way, went back to the grassroots, running for local offices again, working his way back up there, ends up with Sigourney Weaver as a result.
Matt Inman and Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah, why not? See, there's your combo.
Prediction.
Yeah.
See, I didn't go far enough. That's where
we should go. I also predict that Scott and I should watch movies because we have very similar
tastes. Oh, totally. Everything we've talked about tonight. In fact, you're just making me want to go watch it all. In fact, let me guess. You really like The West Wing. I love that show.
You know, I've never actually watched
it. Oh, you got to watch The West Wing.
Scott's like your personal Netflix recommendation.
I know.
Engine.
Now I'm just going to be like, what should I watch today? Maybe. Like, I don't know. I froze. I couldn't watch anything.
You should watch The West Wing. What a fantastic show that is. All right, let's move on to some feedback. You can call us here on the show, 801-471-0462, or send us emails at currentgeek@gmail.com. We got one from somebody named Shauna Pierce, who said in the PS, I could say her name. She says, "Dear gents and guests, thank you for making a show that often features female points of view on pop culture and technology. It's a lot more rare than you think, and it really helps this be one of my favorite shows you ever do. Thanks so much for that, and keep it up, Shauna." Well, good thing we also have another female voice on today's episode, and that I chose to
be here, George.
Yeah. I don't know. It's not even something I think we try. I just think Tom and I like to seek out guests with really interesting perspectives, and it just so happens that many, many of them are female, and some of the bigger
almost 50% of the people in the world are.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I got to admit, we're pretty interesting.
Yeah, good stuff to say, man. I like
some of my best friends are women.
That won't get you in any trouble at all. It's fine. Well, thank you for that feedback. And it's like I say, not something I think so. We consciously do, but I think that's probably a good thing that since we're not doing it consciously either way, all are welcome. Do something nerdy and we're interested. And it just so happens Aileen is a total nerd.
As I mentioned on Current Geek last week, I don't see gender.
Right.
People tell me they're women, I believe them.
You've never checked.
Well, there you go. That's some feedback today, and that means we are done. We're going to give you guys a little breathing room to get your stuff kicked off today. Before we do, though,
tell people about the marathon.
Yeah, please.
Oh, yeah. Tell them what's about to happen in 15 minutes.
Well, in 15 minutes, we're going to keep staying up for the next 24 hours, and we're going to be continuing to broadcast live here from this couch right here. And we're going to have guests and artists and all sorts of people over. And
what is it? So what we're doing is our fifth annual 24-hour Toy Break. Toy Break is our weekly podcast show. I don't even know if do we call them podcasts anymore? I feel
shows,
like the name has changed.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a lot of people watch it on their TVs. So super weird. But yeah, this is our fifth year. We stay up for 24 hours. We have guests and friends and artists and all sorts of interesting people come over.
Interesting people.
We auction off art and toys, and we have some toy releases up online right now at octobertoys.com. You can check all the info at toybreak.com and tune into the live feed. So we're going to be up for 24 hours just having fun, talking about toys, talking about geeky things, talking about Star Wars characters. Who knows what weirdness will come up.
If it's Sunday, they can go watch the previous. They could archive it, right?
Most of it will be up on Sunday. If not, it will be up on like Monday, Tuesday.
Okay.
I might
but
be sleeping all the way.
If it's still Saturday or Friday, you should
Pacific
go to toybreak.com.
Yeah.
Pacific time.
And follow it all year because there's plenty of other great content coming out of there all the time.
You guys were the first thing on my Chromecast when I first got a Chromecast.
What? Nice. Really?
That's what I used to test.
Aww.
Did it look good?
Yeah, it looked great. All right, cool. You were on like big Panasonic TV.
It looked great except for those guys on the couch.
And you did say this is a fifth year, but this is a fifth year live.
This is our eighth year of
actually
Toy Break.
Doing Toy Break.
Oh wow, gosh. That's awesome.
What an old podcast.
Yeah. Wow.
Incidentally, Tom's second thing on his Chromecast was his porn channels that he liked so much. So that happened.
Well, you got to make sure it looks right.
My
right.
What? My Bjorn channels?
Yeah, your Bjorn channels. All the hardcore Bjorn you're into. That's awesome. Hey, well, that's awesome. I'm going to be checking it out myself. I hope other people do as well. And gosh, I guess that's it. Tom, do you have anything you want to mention before we go?
Oh, no, just definitely check out toybreak.com and check out October Toys. These guys are awesome. I love what they do. I love the toys they put out and I love the shows they put out. So just go do that.
Yeah, I agree. That's going to do it for us. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Currentgeek.com is our website. Current Geek on Twitter. You can also find us at currentgeek.reddit.com. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and for our guests. We'll see you next time.
Hi, this is Phil, back with another Game Punting Pick of the Week from the world of crowdfunded tabletop games. This week we're talking about Gondola, a tile racing game in the canals of Venice by Souljar Games. Combining tile placement with racing, two genres with a long history but very little crossover, Gondola looks to do both very well. The classic strategic decision-making of tile placement games like Carcassonne is the foundation for an exciting racing game between Venetian gondoliers navigating the canals and through a series of waypoints. The racing component has been augmented with some rubber banding effects, which may feel familiar to fans of arcade racing games, to keep every player competitive through to the end, and adding more excitement to the quick-paced game for 3-5 players. Gondola is not yet funded, being brand new at the time of this recording, but they have plenty of time to get to their modest $12,000 goal, with the campaign running through March 4th. For more news and reviews of crowdfunded tabletop games, join us on the Game Punting Podcast, available on iTunes or at GamePunting.com. Happy gaming!
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we take a look at one of the more interesting issued U.S. patents of the new year, as Google innovates in the field of internet user browsing privacy. Internet users have for some time been able to browse incognito, or in private modes, in various browser applications. These modes mean that your search history, cookies from a session, and the browsing history will not be retained on your computer. In addition to preventing others from snooping on your internet history, these modes can be used to avoid autofill information, accidental saving of important login credentials, and performing searches not affected by your own history or other users on the same device. These modes have only been manually activated to date, requiring diligence of the user in remembering to activate private browsing whenever it is desired. In January, Google has secured a patent that innovates and moves private browsing to the next level. This patent is directed to a system and a computer method of automatically enabling private browsing so that the user does not have to manually activate privacy mode. The method works by having the browser analyze the content of the web page to determine whether privacy mode is appropriate. For example, the patent claims specifically recite having the browser determine whether a web page being opened was previously filtered or selected to not appear in search results, and if so, the privacy mode is automatically started and the web page is opened in that privacy mode. Thus, the user can establish parameters for automatically triggering privacy mode, such as when they enter a credit card number on a site. It's a potentially very smart implementation of privacy mode browsing when it matters most. But as with all privacy mode browsing, this does not keep websites and internet service providers from tracking your activity. Moreover, high-quality forensic techniques have proven to still be able to reconstruct the browsing history in the current iterations of privacy modes. And granting the patent to Google may mean that this technology remains locked up in a single browser like Chrome. The bottom line is, although this patent is a win for most under privacy law, it will not change the fact that privacy mode browsing is no more protected from official searches and seizures than regular browsing. Still, anything that can help keep credit card and bank numbers and login credentials more secure is a step in the right direction. Enjoy the smart private browsing. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and legal themed questions as segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
Is part of the Frog Pants Studios network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.